Tales through time.
Thank you for tuning in to Tales Through Time. I'm Keegan Rodwick.
And I'm Troy Newman. Typically, we like to start these episodes by giving a little anecdote from our own lives to work in towards the story that we are talking about that day. However, I would like to change things up a little bit. To tie into today's story, Keegan, what is your earliest memory with your grandparents?
My earliest memory of my grandparents is actually one that's a little contested. I have two different earliest memories of my grandparents when I was younger. The first one was that my grandparents had a giant blue van, and I actually should not remember this van because I was a baby, but I distinctly remember being in this van, and I remember who we sold it to because I remember going with my grandfather to sell the van. It was just outside Viroqua, and by all accounts, I should not. I was maybe two, maybe three. But actually, the other memory that I have was my fourth birthday. My grandmother made me a Thomas the Tank Engine birthday cake. So it had the train in the front, two little cars, and a caboose.
And a caboose.
Because I, as a child, I was obsessed, apparently, with Thomas the Tank Engine. But yeah, that's what I remember.
That leads us to today's interviews. We are obviously talking about Keegan's grandparents, John and Judy Krapser.
I grew up on a farm in Avoca, outside of Avoca. That's where I lived on a farm all through grade school, high school, whatever. And then I left and then I went to Madison, you know, sort of a thing. My parents were very hardworking people. We lived on a farm. There was five kids and we all had our chores that we had to do. And we first, my parents rented from my grandparents' farm. And then when I was in eighth grade, they bought a farm, probably 20 miles from our other farm. It was on a hill. I mean, we were brought up, we had to, things we had to do. I mean, my job was, my mom had, she worked a little bit outside the farm. And then we had, I went to school at a one-room school, it was eight classes. And we walked 3.5 miles to school and back. Every day, rain, shine, or whatever.
I do like that she mentioned the 3.5 miles to and from school because that's always the joke of people back in the day that, oh, I had to go to school uphill both ways.
In 5 feet of snow.
5 feet of snow. But it's nice hearing about this because I'm probably going to be hearing things about their childhood that I don't know.
So, John, where'd you grow up?
What did I do?
Okay. No, where'd you grow up?
Where'd I grow up? Listen. In Ithaca, Wisconsin.
Okay. What was your
and
childhood?
I grew up on a farm, just like she did. We had three brothers and one sister. But see, I was the second. I had an older brother, and then I had my sister, and then two brothers behind her. So, but we had to do everything on the farm. We had to get up at 5 o'clock every morning, go milk the cows, help my dad milk the cows, clean the barn. And that's the way we grew up. Once we got grown up, especially when we went to school, we had to make sure that everything was all done before we got to go to school. And then by the time I'm imagining we probably didn't smell very good when we went to school because we never had a bathroom for quite a while because I don't know why.
It's because parents couldn't afford it back then.
You know,
and they didn't spend the money if they didn't have it.
I mean, basically what we took was sponge baths mostly, you know, cleaning ourselves up and getting ready to go to school.
Hearing those two talk in the beginning where my grandma says, now listen, is very much true to the relationship. My grandpa is completely deaf in one ear and is basically almost deaf in the other ear. So it's out of love that she says it because he does have a hard time hearing. So he really does have to focus. So we do have to repeat ourselves quite often around him or we have to talk in an elevated level. But yeah, he talks about his childhood. We actually have footage of when he was a child. They were able to get it off some sort of tape and put it on a CD. So I actually got to see him running around very German-looking family. They all have this very iconic nose. So it was like, wow, that's where we all get our nose from.
We heard a little bit about their early childhood days. Like most people's childhoods, school played a big part in their early lives.
I liked it. We had, you know, just the one teacher, and then you just had roles. You had a first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, and eighth grade. But it was probably not any more than there was four of us in, like when I was in, like started out in first grade, you know, same grade. But I can't remember exactly how my brother's grade was. You know, it was all kind of, you know, about the same all the way through. Probably the most people, kids there were probably about maybe 50 at the most. And she was the one teacher, but we had
50 kids in 8th grade?
No, in the whole high school, in the whole classroom.
Oh, in the whole 8th grade?
First, second, third, fourth, fifth. Oh. I went to all, didn't you go to that, where all the grades were in one room?
Well, yeah, I went to one grade, not one grade schoolhouse too, but had four grades in one room and four grades in another room.
Ours was just one big room.
Didn't have that many in 8th grades in our school, two-room school.
But I would go back to that. I like the one-room school thing. I think you got to be more like family with the kids. You just mingled with everybody. You just kind of, bathrooms were outside. We didn't have no inside bathroom. We had to pack our own lunch. And I used to take, I'll never forget, I like it because we'd take fried egg sandwich because my parents didn't have a lot of money. We just got by with what we had. We'd make fried egg sandwiches, and then my mother would do it. But this other girl that was a good friend of mine, she, same grade I was, she'd come to school and she'd get bought and like ho-hos, you know, this kind of, and I went, but she'd trade something for me so I could have one of those. You know, how kids will do that among each other, you know, but yeah. And I think too, everybody worked together, you know.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Avoca for the 2 years, Avoca High School, and Avoca consolidated with Muscatine, so then I had to ride the bus down there then. I didn't like Muscatine. I resented it because it's just, okay, you just go in and you go into high school, you're a stranger. I mean, it's just, you're like you're an outsider. And they all had, and then I think most of them down in that area was a big, if you didn't go there, you weren't really accepted a lot. So that's why I really was glad to get out of high school, graduate, and be gone.
It's nice hearing this interview from this perspective, because some of this is like definitely new information. Like, I didn't know that she went to Muscatine after high school, that they had to consolidate classes. The fried egg sandwiches are still very much a thing. Maybe they're not fried, but they're hard-boiled egg sandwiches. So that is something that she has continued tradition. She'll pack that when she goes to work, or, you know, for lunch at times.
Delicious.
Yeah, I mean, they are good. So, but yeah, they said that they took typing classes, but she doesn't like using a computer. So I know typing would be more of a typewriter, but you know, still the same keyboard layout, but she gets by.
What I thought was interesting was she talked a bit about a one-room schoolhouse. Back in Viroqua, where you and I grew up, there was a one-room schoolhouse still. It wasn't being used, but the building itself was still there. It was always interesting to me thinking that there were so few students in that wide range of grades that they would all be able to fit in one room.
I remember we would take school tours and go into the one-room schoolhouse. I think we actually even had a day where we had classes in one. I just remember sitting in the desk. And, you know, it's something that you can see versus hearing someone, like, describe it. Like, they didn't have, assuming they didn't have heat because they had to bundle up for the winter. And 50 kids throughout all 8 grades. I do love that dynamic because they're always repeating each other what they answer back and forth. So that was very much a very typical conversation between John and Judy.
I went to a two-room parochial school with nuns. And we had to go to church every morning, go to Mass every morning, and then we'd go back and go to school. Had nuns for teachers. My first through fourth grade, I had a teacher a nun by the name of Sister Linus, and she liked me. And I got along real good in them first 4 years. And then my second 4 years, through eighth grade, I had a teacher, another nun by the name of Sister Alfred, and she didn't like me for some reason. But anyway, I didn't do as well under her as I did under Sister Linus. But anyway, we all through high school, or all through grade school, we had a bunch of friends. We all knew each other because we all were Catholic and went to the same school. And we got, the only sports we got to play was baseball or softball. And once we graduated, I went to Ithaca High School. And of course, that was quite different. Of course, we meeting a bunch of different people. And of course, we were from a parochial school going to a public school. And we weren't accepted at first, but after our freshman year, pretty much we got accepted by everybody, especially you got to be friends with everybody.
We also had to double check parochial school. Just for, if anyone doesn't know, it is a private primary or secondary school affiliated with a religious organization. I am surprised you didn't mention, because half our family's left-handed, he would get slapped with a ruler anytime he tried to use his left hand by the nuns.
How dare you not be right-handed?
Yeah, you use the hand that you're supposed to be using.
It's not as common nowadays, but talking to my own grandparents, I've heard stories about going to schools run by nuns. Both of my grandparents grew up in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I believe both of them went to religious schools with nuns. Even in their stories, there was always like a nun that did not like them. Almost everyone I hear stories from about when they're talking about back in the day when they went to a school run by nuns, there was always a nun that did not like them.
Exactly. One nun that always let them maybe bend the rules or break them, and one nun that was like, absolutely not. We will follow everything to a T.
Judy did not have a lot to say about her childhood and teenage years outside of school, but John did have some more stories that he wanted to share.
When I was 4 years old, my grandparents lived about a mile and a half on a farm north of, up the road from where we live. Went up there one day and she sent, we got a load of hay. And I was on the wagon and my grandmother bought out a brown bag with a string tied around it, handed it to me on the bale of hay and told me I couldn't open it until we got home. Well, got down to the house and I slid off the hay rack and ran into the house and grabbed an old fashioned can opener, you know, the one where you'd stick in and work it around. And being left-handed, I went and stuck it in the knot and pulled up on it and it come out of the knot and caught me in the eye. I've been blind in the left eye ever since. My mother found me laying on the kitchen floor with that thing sticking out of my eye. I guess that wasn't a pretty sight. I ended up with three or four different operations trying to get the sight back, but could never get it to come back. So they just kind of give up on that.
My entire life, I've always known that for him to have a fake eye. I remember he would, when we were kids, take it out to scare us. Obviously not like to be mean, but, you know, it's funny. But yeah, it's always been a little bit tough because obviously he's has to navigate around and now he's deaf in 1 year as well. So, but he has always been good spirits about it. I remember him having to obviously clean the eye. So I remember, you know, that sometimes it'd just be sitting there. I know that might gross some people out, but you know, it is what it is. You got to take care of that. But yeah, I remember hearing that story pretty young. It's just something that was normal. You know, never thought anything of it.
My dad had a German Shepherd dog in my niece from Madison was out there, and unbeknownst to us, my dad had, or somebody had took food out to my dog over on the other side of the house, and he was back there eating, and my niece went back there without us knowing it, and the next thing we heard was this, yip, you know, and we went back there, and here I run around the house, and here this dog was both feet over the top of her, and he'd already caught her. Well, I think it was down across here, yeah, like this,
and
laid her cheek open. But I called off and kicked the dog. He went yelping away, but the next day my dad got him put down. He couldn't have that, you know. Of course, we had to take her to the doctor, but that wasn't a very nice day. She was my goddaughter, and we've been very close ever since, I think. Very close.
The Crapser side of the family, grandpa's side, are very close. Like, everyone still talks. They keep in contact, family reunions. Obviously not recently due to the pandemic, but I know they've seen each other through their weddings. I do have some recollection of that story. I remember hearing something about, like, one of their family pets had caught a kid, but and they had to put the dog down.
We heard from both John and Judy there about their school years, their early teenage years, and it wasn't long afterwards that they would end up meeting.
Well, I met Judy at a wedding. And
Ithaca.
She kind of stuck out, so I kind of, yeah, well, anyway, I work for finance companies, and yeah, every time you turned around, they were transferring you to some other town, and we had to pick up and move all the time, pretty much a lot. Went from where? Went from Dodgeville, or from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to Dodgeville, Wisconsin.
We were Richard Center.
And then from Risen Center, and then we Baraboo. Went from Risen Center to Baraboo, and from Baraboo to Elkhorn. And finally, I just said, enough, enough. This is, and I went to work for
Milwaukee.
I went to work for General Tire in Milwaukee as a credit manager. And after I left there, why, the credit union in Westby called and wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming up there and going to work there. And then I jumped at the chance just because it was getting the heck out of Elkhorn. And
well, you were Tails Corners. When we first married, you were in Hales Corners.
Oh, yeah. Hales Corners. So that's where we went to Cedar Rapids after that.
No. We came.
Hales Corners. I went to Cedar Rapids as a manager.
Cedar Rapids.
In Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And then from there back to Dodgeville because we didn't hated it out there in Iowa.
I hated it.
She hated it out there. She was pregnant at the time.
People were so unfriendly. It's not like living here in a rural quarter,
And she was all by herself. And, of course, I never felt like I ever got accepted out there. People there they wanted you to join these different organizations, and you'd join them, and they would just kind of shut you out, you know. Just people out there were not very friendly at all accepting you. So we kind of hated it out there. So I told the home office, I says, either ship me back to Wisconsin or I quit, you know. Well, they shipped me back to Dodgeville.
John's early career forced them to move around quite often until he almost got fed up with the entire situation and essentially told his current employer, like, hey, move me back to Wisconsin. That's where I want to be.
I do remember hearing that story a few times. This one actually had a little bit more detail than I hadn't heard before about not feeling accepted in Iowa. That part I haven't heard. But I do remember that Judy wasn't very happy, obviously being pregnant, being in Iowa away from family, you know, she's probably going to need help. And that he also was ready to go back to Wisconsin.
After learning about how they moved around so often when they were younger, I also wanted to know how their relationship kicked off. The proposal, the wedding, you know, all that good stuff.
Oh, it was at Christmas.
Yeah.
Sitting at home on my dad's davenport.
Yeah.
And that's when I proposed to you, right? Give you the ring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually did it right.
No, not really. Didn't ask my mom and dad.
Yeah.
Do you remember that day?
Oh, yeah. Our wedding. Okay, our wedding. We got married at St. Patrick's Catholic Church.
St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Madison. And
our
reception was at
our dinner was
at Spring Green,
the Round Barn. Okay, this is coming back now. And then we went to Ithaca School, where your mom had the reception for us.
Yeah,
had a cake and just small, you know, just the neighbors, I suppose, people. Anyway, we had it there. Then we had a dance at Plain. I don't know if you know where all these places are.
We were all over that day.
So you, you can see how unsettled we were because it was just, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget because there wasn't many in the church.
Yeah. And of course, her parents never come to her, our wedding.
Yeah, no.
Her uncle gave her away at the wedding.
No, so. Not my uncle, my cousin.
Cousin, yeah. That's right, cousin.
Dorothy Jean and Paul Meese gave me away. They lived on a farm now.
But they stood behind Judy.
But that was a long, never would I ever do that again. That was really not too great on my part, maybe.
It was a hard day, but I was just beginning to wonder what I was getting myself into. Really, but no. I was really kind of happy, really.
Well, I hope so.
I really was. I was kind of happy because she was very pretty. Very pure.
I was real tiny.
What about you, Judy? What were you thinking as you were walking down the aisle?
I guess I just knew it would be, I'd have a life of my own that I could go on with it.
It was a good life. We've had a good life. We've been married 55 years now, 56 this year.
Yeah.
So it's been a good life.
I have never heard the story of them meeting. I've never heard their wedding stories. So like all of this is completely new to me. I didn't realize that they were literally traveling around all over, Northwest Madison area, all around Spring Green, Cross Plains. Hearing them talk it just brings a smile to my face because it's just very typical, like John and Judy. I didn't know that she didn't want a third. The firstborn is actually my mother.
I really liked John's answer when I asked him what his thoughts were as he saw Judy walking down the aisle. His first instinct was to go with, what am I getting myself into?
Him saying, what am I getting myself into, I think crosses a lot of people's minds in their weddings. Like, you're very excited. Obviously, you know, he proposed. She said yes. But for both sides of the party, because when you walk down the aisle, like, this is it. Like, once you go through that ceremony, depending on your religious beliefs, like, you're bound. Like, this is it. That's the person you are.
It's a serious commitment.
Exactly. And I think, regardless, you're always going to have that thought. But it does make me laugh. You know, what am I getting myself into? They've been married, obviously, this whole time, so it worked.
It worked. I thought it was really funny when he got into, but I was actually really happy, and Judy's response was, well, I would have hoped so.
Yes. They're always like that. It's great.
Those answers kind of touched on what we're going to be talking about next, but John and Judy's relationship and marriage did not go over well with Judy's parents.
Her parents never liked me because
he was Catholic. It's all
I was Catholic and they weren't, and they never liked me at all because I'm just because of that. And I just felt like an outcast every time I ever went to pick her up. But
when John and I started dating, They were okay in the beginning, and then my mother, my dad, it was just a nightmare. And I went to go home because I had bought myself, when I was working in Madison, I bought myself a cedar chest, you know, different things that I had, you know, that I had money, and I had money in a savings account down in Avoca. And my parents, because they didn't like him, all of a sudden everything just
disappeared.
I went there to get my stuff. And my dad's, they told me never to step back in there. And then, see, I wasn't allowed. That's why I didn't get to know my younger brothers, because I wasn't allowed to see them. And I would never do that to any family, because that was so hurtful.
The whole thing really started is when you decided to become a Catholic.
Yeah.
You started taking instruction to be a Catholic, because Judy didn't want to have a mixed marriage when we were married. See, and I was Catholic. She didn't want to be.
Because I wanted to go with a family wise. That's what I wanted a family. He goes to church.
So when they found out she was baptized into the Catholic religion, why? The first time in my life we went home to your place and your dad come downstairs with the Bible in his hand. I had never seen a religious article in the house up to that point. And he started quoting me passages out of the Bible. And I said, Judy, come on, let's get out of here. And we never went back after that.
No, just to go get my stuff.
I mean, I was shaking. I was so mad, I was shaking, you know. he started quoting me passages out of the Bible, and I said, nah, enough is enough.
We've kind of touched on it in previous episodes, but this kind of harkens back to the people you end up falling in love with can have serious consequences on other aspects of your life. In this instance, Judy essentially becomes disowned from her own family.
And that's the thing I honestly did not know. I just do remember being young and like remember hearing about like, oh, you know, there are different religions, they're dating and they have to get married, so one partner has to convert to another religion. Or you couldn't baptize your child somewhere because you were a different religion, you know. But to disown your own child over a difference of religion, I just can't comprehend that.
My father's side of the family is very religious as well. I would like to think I would never do it, but I can understand seeing the strict adherence that I've seen on my father's side of the family, seeing that, I can kind of understand where they're getting at. But the thing to me that's weird is that your grandmother's parents were not religious. So it's not like they had other beliefs that were completely counter to Catholicism.
They get up in arms and he brings down a Bible. And like my grandpa said, they've never seen any sort of religious artifacts in the house, and to be then quoting stuff out of the Bible.
That situation to me was really weird hearing it. Like, I don't understand what he was trying to do there, because to me it only comes across as him mocking your grandfather's religion.
Exactly. I think that's probably what made him so upset that he had to leave. And this is also your fiance slash wife, their parents.
It was a very difficult time for Judy, becoming cut off from the people who raised you. Not only them, but your own siblings as well, because Judy's being cut off from all of that.
That's one thing that I've always known is that, like, to her, I did know some minor things, but nothing, like, in-depth to what I'm hearing now. But she always preaches, like, family. We're family, we stick together. And I think now it makes sense, given the context, that it's just very much she wants everyone to be happy and together.
Judy was not on her own at that time, though.
It was very hard on me. It was hard to let go. I mean, they were my parents. They're, you know, and they didn't want nothing to do with me. It was hard. I mean, it was hard for me to go back to his parents, you know, and I had no place to go.
My mother and dad kind of took her under their wing. They really made her feel like welcome.
They paid for my reception because I didn't have the money to do it, you know. And I bought my own dress, but that wasn't that expensive. But my aunt, on my mom's side, they were probably not as willing, probably.
Well, you had your aunt from Madison.
Yeah.
Aunt and uncle from Madison that kind of took you under their wing, too.
They were probably more, they worked at, my cousin Deanna lives in Madison yet.
She was able to find some comfort in some of the more distant members of her own family and your grandfather's parents as well.
His father passed away before I was born, or maybe I was just an infant, but his mother, Dorothy Krapser, was a very nice lady. I remember going to her place quite often when I was a kid, because I was also their first grandchild. Maybe not the first great-grandchild, but we spent a lot of time going there. Sometimes I'd spend the night at Dorothy's house. We'd go to a little farm. She was a really nice woman.
This situation with Judy's parents, with your great-grandparents, you didn't really know much about it.
No, I honestly didn't know too much other than I believe her mother passed away from breast cancer, and that's essentially the extent of how much I knew about them.
What did you know about their relationship?
All I knew is that it wasn't good, and that's like a main reason why she works so hard to, like, if there's any sort of strife in the family, because, you know, it's family, you know, things happen. It's all about family, getting people together. Everyone's happy. Hearing what we know so far, it puts a lot of that and a lot of that behavior and her beliefs into perspective.
Judy's parents did eventually come back around, but by the time they did, in Judy's own words, it just wasn't the same.
First of all, my brother was getting married. My older brother invited me because I hadn't been in contact with him for years. Yeah. And they invited me to their wedding, Gary and Debbie did. And so we went to the wedding, and my aunt took my dad by the hand, and he said, you guys start talking now. And so then we started talking. It was hard, I mean, but we did go back a little bit, not much. By the time we had moved from Elkhorn to Westby, then my parents did start to come back around. But Troy, it was never the same. There's no, I mean, the feelings were gone.
You go over to their place and you just, all the time you were like you were on pins and needles because you didn't know what was going to happen next, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way I always felt every time I went there, but I don't know how she felt, but that's
no,
the way I felt.
They weren't like my mom. It was hard. It was hard for me when she was dying of cancer and I did, you know, I did go when my turn to go and stay with her during the night so my dad would come during the day. It was hard because the feeling is not, I didn't have that feeling towards him as a mom and that I had for years. And so then I did my job as a daughter. I drove from, we lived in Rocco here, and I drove up there and stayed at the hospital. My other brothers did too. Yeah. But they were just so, my mom was just terrible. It was hard to really give my feelings because after what I went through as a child, it was hard. My dad, after she died, my dad said it should never happen, but he had no control over it. My mom had a temper, very bad temper. And, you know, he said it should never went that far. And then my dad was really good about it when the years went on.
I think that happens for a lot of people when your parents essentially disown you. It's never the same because that's your parent. Like, they're supposed to be, you know, your foundation, your emotional stability to give you what you need in life. And when it's pulled out from under you and then they expect you to kind of come around and continue as if nothing happened, how do you do that?
I personally do not believe there's any way to fully recover from that because the relationship you had before the disowning is almost tainted in a way.
Well, only thing that kind of is just like to comment on is that the aunt, you know, pulled them together and was like, you need to solve this. But realistically, it should never fall on the disowned's shoulders.
When Judy was cut off, it included most of her immediate family. When her parents started coming back around, that kind of included some kind of connection with her siblings as well.
I didn't feel as close going back to stuff because I didn't think my other brothers
accepted
me as well. But now they all call. Mm-hmm. And my sister, that the 12 years difference, she makes a point. So it's kind of brought us back together where we should have been in the beginning as growing up, but it is what it is, you know. You know, you can't change it, but yeah.
One of your younger brothers,
I was not as close to Tom. That was when the time he got wounded in Vietnam and he was taken back I was gone. I wasn't at home anymore, so I really had no part of that, what he went through or whatever. I know his leg was really hurt. We were never very close. It took a long until probably the last couple years that he's gotten closer to me, but it was like a cold. He was like, felt towards me.
A distance.
And it was hard. I mean, it's hard to see because they're all so close and I wasn't, but you just go on and you do the things you have to do and it is. But now he's gotten a little better. He calls. But Rodney, my youngest brother that went through.
Well, he was pretty young yet when this was all going on.
Yeah, he didn't know, but he calls me now, and he's really close. And then my sister, we weren't, but she said I didn't, but I felt more like, she's more like a daughter growing up then than she was a sister, because we really couldn't play together like I did with my older brothers. But yeah, it's you can't take it back, and you can't, but it's not the same. Once this happens, it's hard to get over that.
And go back.
They talk on the phone. They actually just had a family reunion. I do know that her side of the family, they do make an effort to have a family reunion every year. So they all still get together. So they're a lot closer. And I think we touched on this another episode of, I can't remember which one, but like having the age gap of our siblings. And she mentioned it here as well. Like when you have something that's like greater than 10 years, they feel more like a child, you know, like your child rather than a sibling because you're taking care of them rather than hanging out and sharing these experiences. But I am glad that, you know, after learning all this information that her and her siblings have come together.
It's not the typical sibling dynamic that you might see with other families, but you can tell there's an attempt at least. Judy's relationship with her parents kind of started to recover, but it was around the same time that her mother was diagnosed with cancer. Judy would go and spend some time with her mother in the hospital when she could, but it was difficult for her. She no longer saw her mother as her mother, as a mother figure, as a parent. They didn't have that close relationship anymore. And unfortunately, even after her mother's passing, much of those feelings did not go away.
I felt bad, but I didn't have the emotions that I know in my heart I should have had more. It was hard. I couldn't let go because all that they'd done to me, it was hard. I mean, yeah, I felt bad, but I couldn't feel like I would if I was lose Keegan or John or one of my own kids. It's not, I didn't have that feeling as I should have had.
So it wasn't really so much grief.
No.
No.
Probably more resentment.
We went to the funeral, but
I did everything as a daughter would do. I went to, and then my dad even asked me, because I was working at Old Town, if I would have Susie make the food and bring it down to the funeral and stuff. And I did. The family was all there. My mom's siblings, aunt and uncles. I just felt like a...
outsider.
Yeah. I don't know how you just like, they resented me.
I think this touches on what we were saying a little bit earlier. Things just aren't the same. You were ostracized, cast out. You can't get back and rekindle those same feelings because there is, as she mentioned, a little bit of resentment there. Like, you can patch over those, but like, you can never truly get to that stage. And maybe some people would, potentially argue that you could. But I think for a lot of people, it's very difficult. It would require a lot of work on both parties. And it's unfortunate, she's attending her mother's funeral. These things are happening, but what can you do?
John and Judy had a lot of difficulties up until now, particularly Judy, because of this situation that she found herself in with her parents. But on the plus side, the two of them were able to start creating their own family in the meantime.
I wanted a couple kids, but I didn't want three. Yeah. Jody,
she only wanted two. I wanted three.
So. And you went with three.
Yeah, I went with three, yeah. We had that perfect cut. We had one boy and one girl. And then, I don't know, somehow you weren't. I got, and then we just, you know, and I didn't, well, I didn't do anything to prevent it, probably, so that didn't help anything. I was
excited.
She was
happy as a lark.
Yeah.
Yeah. She wanted children. She wanted children, so.
Yeah. I wanted, it's something part of your life that you want. I mean, I wanted, I said, I don't resent having three. It's just that I just thought it was easier because they were all bing, bing, bing,
2 years between each one.
No, 18 months between Tim and
Not quite 2 years, but.
But if I had to say, I'd have all boys.
Yeah.
Tim was so easy to raise,
Yeah, if you ever tried to raise two girls, you'd know why you'd want just boys.
Dawn was probably our most challenging girl.
I could tell Tim he had a curfew at midnight, and you could set your clock by it, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the two girls, that was a different story. You never know when they were going to show up.
Dawn was the testy one.
It's great hearing it now, hearing that they would prefer three boys over the two girls and Tim. I do love the saying, happy as a lark. That's one thing that I've appreciated growing up. I've picked up on all of their old sayings, but I haven't heard them use happy as a lark in a long time.
I have to say, in the meantime, we were in process of moving. We lived with John's parents for a little bit when Dawn was born, and his dad made a bond with her. They were like this.
Yeah.
He'd come in from the barn, and I wasn't one of these.
Got to clean up. In his arms all the time. He'd go get her, and
he'd take her to town with her.
Yeah, he'd take her all over.
I don't know. They all were growing up. They played together. They all played together. But Jody always said Dawn and Tim
were always the closest.
They were always do things. They were too close, and she was kind of like the outsider. they say that, you should have an even number.
Yeah.
And Jody said, they laugh about it, but what did they do? Put her and Dawn put...
Oh, they put Jody in the dryer and turned it on.
Yeah. They were mean
to her.
They
do things to her all the time.
And we didn't believe her because she was one of those kids that whined a lot, And that's a trouble when you...
All the time. We never believed her, but...
Yeah.
come to find out, we should have.
I will say that's one of my aunt's favorite stories to tell, is how Tim and my mom, Dawn, put her in the dryer and turned it on. The other thing is, I think that also shows that my mother, Dawn, loves farm. Like, she loves being on a farm. She loves horses. She owns a lot of horses. And I think that's probably why her growing up there with his grandfather, his parents, felt prompted kind of like for her love of the farm.
Do you remember when my mother, before she had her third child, she was kind of commenting like, oh, I'm almost done with this.
Yep.
Your grandparents had a similar situation because all three of their kids ended up moving out. And then they ended up starting taking care of you as well.
Oh, well, we had Keegan from the time he was a little baby all the way through to. But
if he,
I think Keegan pretty much stayed with us pretty much most of the time. I would say probably 90% of the time he was with us.
Yeah.
From the time he was a baby until.
He thinks more of us as a mom and dad. I don't know how he talks to you about it.
I don't know how he talks about us, but I mean, we think the world of him. We'd do anything for him. So
I mean, if he needs something, we're there to help him. Yeah. If he does, you know. It's like,
what was it like for you guys to have your youngest move out and then essentially?
We loved it. We loved having him there. We did. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, it
was a lot of work, a lot of responsibility for, you know, him and I. And I was working nights, but then you were home.
Yeah.
Day but and then.
We loved having him here, really.
He was never no problem.
He's more or less like a son to us than anything, than a grandson. I don't know what we'd have done if we didn't have Keegan.
I don't know.
And really,
because we think about
it. Kind of filled a void, really.
Yeah, between that. And now it's, you know, and we don't bother. We don't call him. I'll send him a text if I want to ask him, you know.
And we know he's got a life of his own, so.
You know, and
kind of leave him go.
It's good to hear a more honest opinion. And I think it's like, I don't know if I said this earlier, but it's a good thing that you interviewed him, because I think having a non-family member interview them allows them to open up a little bit more. It kind of removes like, oh, how much do you say? How much do you not? And it gives a little bit more of a realistic take on everything that's happened. And maybe I'll have to tell them, let them know that I do consider them more of my parents. Because I always tell people that.
How do you feel about your grandparents nowadays?
I love them a lot. You know, as much as they consider me kind of like their fourth child, like I do consider them more of my parents. And, you know, I can always count on them for anything. If I ever need help with anything, you know, I know that they're there. It's been nice because I've traveled quite a lot. So it was nice to have a place to stay in those transitionary periods when I'd be moving from or to somewhere. You know, I'd be staying with them. And as you mentioned, answer a lot of their tech questions, get everything set up. They use iPhones, they Snapchat, and everything. So they're pretty hip on technology. I remember when she first got her iPhone, she used so many emojis. It was great. Because, you know, there's always that generational gap, you know, like what we consider like different faces for emojis. I know like there was another thing like Gen Z, like, oh, millennials always use this. People who are an older generation, they don't understand that some emojis have a different meaning and different contexts.
They see you as almost like a fourth child. They see you as their own son. They love you a lot. And they do still have a message for you, Keegan.
Keegan's a part in our part. He's still in our part. He's like a son to us. And so he's still a part of. We always said told him you could have the house. You know, we told him a few things where he knows where what is, and said, you take it and run. You take it and run. Because he'd do anything for you and I. He bought me that
air fryer.
I said, Keegan, when you go, you know, Madison, you take it with you. He said, Grandma, I bought it for you. I don't use it that much. Once in a while I use it, but very rarely. I want him to take it, but I can't. He gave it to me so I'd really be hurting his feelings if I told him, you know. So I got an air fryer. But that's Keegan. He's good. It's as good to us as we're good to him, too. So we can't complain.
Well, just to give a little context, the air fryer, she said she asked me about air fryers, and then she thought she might want an air fryer, and that maybe it would be nice to have around the house, because then she wouldn't have to cook, you know, like the full oven, that they could toss some things in there, very crisp things. So I was like, oh, okay, perfect. And then I was Best Buy, and I saw they were having a deal of the day, which was like a half off air fryer. So I was like, okay, perfect, I'll buy it, you know, and gift it to her. I'll have to ask her later her true opinion now that I know about the air fryer.
He keeps everything so private for
us. Yeah. Everything he keeps to himself.
Yeah.
Which is all right.
And I think he needs to confide.
That's all right.
Yeah. You know, but he told us. He told me, he said he'd never bring anybody home, whoever he met.
And I think it just all stems from, you know, their message for me being more open. I'm gay, and, you know, growing up, it can be quite dangerous for you, especially in a small town community. And coming out was very hard. I didn't want to lose my grandparents because they're incredibly important to me, but they are religious. And I think we all know what that means. And they've accepted me like there was never any issue, which has been obviously amazing.
This essentially brings us to today in John and Judy's life. And I asked them what their hopes are for the future.
Like I said, hopefully get to see one of those grandkids married before I'm dead and gone.
I hope to live to be 100 years old.
I feel good. I mean, I've been in good health, I have to say, more so than you are, but I could die tomorrow, too.
I'm just hoping that we have good health yet for a while. So,
obviously, I am invested in, you know, their health. And so, like, I also hope that they are in good health for a long time. And my grandfather did battle prostate cancer. Can't remember the exact years. It was around when I was graduating university, so maybe around, like, 2014. They've so far been in great health, and hopefully they live to be as old as possible. I think she hopes to, you know, see us get married because she wants us to be happy. I think the theme is that she did have a tough childhood with her parents to begin with. Then everything happened when she got married. I think she just wants to be there and see us being happy and be part of that union and not miss that. I don't foresee myself getting married for a long time, so we'll have to rely on her other grandchildren to do that. Thank you for tuning in to this episode and hearing about the lives of my grandparents. Just wanted to give you a little update for our coming episodes. I will be working on interviewing my friend about his life growing up and his ties to spirituality, being a medium, a psychic, and what that entails, and also another friend to kind of speak more on LGBTQ in his life.
Living up here in the metro, I wanted to do something timely, something that's related to a lot of the issues we're seeing in the Twin Cities area. So I am working on a couple of stories about the racial tensions that individuals have seen in the cities and in the suburbs. So stay tuned. We will have those and much more in future episodes of Tales Through Time.
As always, you can look up Tales Through Time, that's TalesThruTime, on Facebook, Twitter, and Patreon.
If you have any story ideas, if you yourself would like to tell your story, or if you know someone with an interesting story, send us those details. We would love to interview them. We would love to share their story with the world.
Recording in Viroqua.
And Minneapolis.
I'm Keegan Rudwick.
And I'm Troy Newman. Thank you for joining us.